Welcome to DACOM Digital, the Digital Asset Compliance and Market Integrity Podcast. Solidus Labs hosts conversations with the builders, movers, and shakers of a safe and regulated crypto and DeFi industry.
Welcome, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us for another episode of DACOM Digital. DACOM stands for the Digital Asset Compliance and Market Integrity Summit, Forum, and now Podcast, and you are here for our second season. We think of DACOM Digital as a series of conversations with the mover, builders, and shakers of a safe and regulated crypto and DeFi industry and ecosystem. And today, we have a real privilege hosting one of Canada's crypto pioneers. I think it's a fair description. Pam, feel free to correct me in a second if I'm wrong. Pamela Draper, the co-founder, CEO, and president of Bitvo, one of the earliest, very regulation and safety-focused platforms in Canada. Pam, thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate you joining us from Calgary, correct?
That is correct. And thank you very much, Hen, for having me on the podcast today. It feels weird to hear you say pioneer, but I've been in the business for almost five and a half years now, and our platform's been live for 5 years. In June will be its fifth year anniversary. So I suppose in crypto years, that actually is quite early.
Yeah, there's something about crypto years that you can't really define. Does it make people get older faster or younger? I'm not sure, but I completely identify with the sentiment. And look, I also joined this industry about 5.5 years ago. I think you have a bit more track record than me, but in an industry this dynamic, by any measure, you're an OG.
So yeah. Well, I think two things too, like. Crypto hasn't been around for that long, right? So being around for 5 years makes you around for almost half of its lifetime and certainly most of its mainstream lifetime. But then to your point, in crypto, a lot happens in any one given year. So while 5 years is about half of the lifespan, it also feels like in regular years about at least 10 years time in terms of what's transpired.
Right. And you, unlike me, had the experience of working in banking before, which we'll get to in a second. So I'm really curious to ask about the how different it was for you, or maybe not that different. But I do want to say first that I'm not sure if I ever mentioned to you, but Canada actually has a really warm place in my heart. I spent two of my formative years in high school in British Columbia.
Wow.
As a corollary, the Canadian crypto industry has a very warm place in my heart. I think some of the most interesting stuff are happening in crypto, both in terms of how, platforms like Bitvo have been so early in trying to set standards, for the right, safe, regulated way to do it, and also in terms of regulation, and we'll get to that. But I've never been to Calgary, so I guess I'll just ask, how cold is it there right now?
In Calgary, it really depends on the day. Today is actually pretty cold. It's only about 10 degrees. We go in Celsius here. I'm not sure what that would be in Fahrenheit, but a week ago, it was about 30 degrees, which I know would be around 100 degrees Fahrenheit. So, it really depends on the day. We're having a momentary cold snap, and it should be back up to about 75 degrees this weekend.
And I guess just because it's still fresh in everyone's mind, at least I'm in Brooklyn, so here on the East Coast, were you guys affected by the same smoke that we got? Because everyone here is blaming Canada.
That was Quebec in Ontario. So other side of the country, it would be like, if I was in California and you were in New York.
Okay.
So we were impacted by different fires, but not the same ones that were covering New York and smoke and got all that attention.
Right. Well, I feel like the level of action in weather talk has been catching up with the level of action in crypto talk.
Yes, that might be true.
There's an odd alignment between how both are very complex and dynamic recently. I'm prone to chit chat, but let me start by asking you to introduce yourself. Sorry,
sure.
We're already deep into the conversation. A little bit about yourself and, of course, about Bitvo.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned, I spent most of my career so far in typical corporate and investment banking, so traditional finance. I worked for two different big Canadian banks, CIBC and then BMO. And one of my larger clients at BMO, when he sold his successful payments business about 6 years ago, asked me to join him on the client side and co-found a cryptocurrency trading platform. Mm-hmm. At the time, I was working in Toronto and I'd been in banking for about 14 years. And I thought, absolutely not. I'm not leaving Toronto and leaving traditional banking and entering this weird world of cryptocurrency. But that was right before the holidays in 2017. And he said, you know, think about it over the course of the holidays and get back to me in January. And I did. And I got back to him January 1 and I said, when can we start? And I think what really tipped my decision was, what would I regret more? This is a new emerging industry. As I did more research into it, I started to go down that rabbit hole that everyone does when they get into the industry and think about the potential that it could have on the traditional financial markets that I had worked in my entire career. And I thought, you know, what would I regret more, doing this and having it fail or whatever happens with it happen, or not doing it and potentially watching from the sidelines as this prior client that I'd worked with, who I had a lot of respect for, who has a successful co-founder previously, and helping him hopefully replicate that success again.
Wow. It's so interesting. So it took a holiday or a vacation to get you through this. And you know, to be honest with you, I couldn't identify more. I think that regardless of crypto, it's an entrepreneurial bug. I think that makes some of us feel that it makes sense and others feel that it doesn't. But I'm personally very happy that you made the decision, knowing what you've been building. So let me ask you the next question, which is, what was that like?
It's funny.
From Toronto, from banking to crypto, mm-hmm. also I guess specifically from Toronto to Calgary, two very different places.
Yeah. I had a mentor who was a more serial entrepreneur, who was helping me think about things at the time, advised me on it. And he said, you know, you have no idea what you're getting into. I don't know about this crypto thing, but just starting a business from scratch, you have no idea what you're getting into. And I thought, I've done 14 years of investment banking. There's nothing on this planet that's more difficult than that. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about. And it took me 1 or 2 months into the startup to be like, oh, wow, yeah, no, I was way over my skis. And nothing is more difficult than doing a startup. I think that's still to this day. So it was tough. The first, and crypto was new to me. Starting a business was new to me. At the time, there was no regulation or goalpost or framework to put your business in. So you really had to kind of think about what made sense and do that as well. And for the first 6 months, I think it's probably like having a newborn baby. Like, you put all this work and effort into it, but you don't really get anything in return, in that the platform's not live, you don't have any customers, there's no feedback. So you're getting up every day and you're building this thing that you have absolutely no idea if it's ever going to work or if anyone's ever going to use it, until you get to the launch stage, and then it kind of gets fun again, but also terrifying in different ways.
I guess it's kind of like having a baby, but not being 100% sure if it's going to be born. I don't have children, so I guess
me either, so I shouldn't say, but.
Wow. So, and then moving from banking to this very new asset class that in a lot of ways is trying to find its way next to traditional finance. 5 years ago, today we're in a very different place. And even now we're still at the very beginning, but 5 years ago, it must've been a completely different game. What was that like? If you could kind of walk me a little bit through some of the differences you noticed, what you liked more about crypto, what you liked less, anything, any thought?
Yeah, well, I mean, as Solidus is aware, because we've worked quite closely together, we always conducted ourselves in a manner in terms of, we knew we were going to get regulated, even though regulation didn't exist at the time, we knew it was coming. And we always thought, especially coming from a traditional background, it was really important to hold ourselves to that standard that would stand the test of regulation when it eventually happened. So we sort of really conducted ourselves in that manner of a traditional financial institution, and going through the rigor that would entail in terms of identifying clients and using blockchain monitoring tools like Chainalysis, and not really embracing the crypto is meant to be an anonymous vehicle narrative that very much existed at the time 5 years ago. So it wasn't so different in that way. But then certainly as we've progressed to today, it's become more and more like traditional banking, in that a lot of the structure that I would have had at my prior life has now been imposed here. So at Bitvo, we operated 2 years without any regulation at all. And then in 2020, we became regulated by FINTRAC, which is similar to the US's FinCEN from an anti-money laundering, know your client perspective, and began reporting to them. And then a year later in 2021, the Securities Commissions in Canada laid out a very clear framework that I think people in the US are still hoping for in terms of clarity, at least. And so then we were off to the races in terms of applying for a license as a restricted dealer with the Securities Commissions, which we obtained in April of 2022. And then we'll become a full IROC or CIRO, as our regulators change their name to, by April of 2024. So very much moving from a completely unregulated, though conducting ourselves in a way that we think regulation will withstand, to being a fully regulated entity that is regulated by similar regulators to what would regulate the banks that I worked at previously.
Right. Oh my gosh, I have so many questions after each one of your answers, but I'll try to focus on one. I mean, I'll just say a couple of responses. First of all, I will never, ever, ever stop appreciating, crypto entrepreneurs who, you know, as early as 2017, 2018, focused on trying to become regulated. I have a friend as a former British regulator, and he likes to say that regulatory unclarity is frustrating. It's also a natural part of innovation, and it's also an opportunity to do the right thing. And I have a bunch more questions a little bit about that strategy, but let me start by asking a little bit. So when you going deeper into Bitvo and its role in the industry, this focus on regulation from the get-go, it's a strategic decision. And I guess I want to ask you a little bit. So what do you see as Bitvo's role in the market? You've been building this incredible platform and really ahead of the curve in regulation. Tell us a little bit more about, Bitvo, its role in the market, in Canada, elsewhere. I guess another way of asking it, so how has it been going?
Yeah, I'll give you a funny anecdote in terms of not why we are the way we are. I mean, we were always meant to be regulatory forward. The co-founder and largest shareholder, he owned a very successful global payments business that operated in the ATM and the debit credit card terminal space. So he's used to that regulation. I'm used to the regulation. Not only did we think it was the right thing to do, but we had this story that my co-founder came across that sort of spurred actually the creation of Bitvo. And are you familiar with Quadriga?
Yes.
I assume you are. I assume most people listening to this podcast would be.
The notorious Quadriga.
The notorious Quadriga was Canadian, unfortunately. And my co-founder had come across an associate of Gerald Cotton's, and he was looking for banking, and he was asking my co-founder how he could get banking for his exchange. And my co-founder was trying to help him out, and he was saying, could I meet with this person and help to see if I can help him figure out his platform and banking and the like. And needless to say, the associate of Gerald Cotton's seemed to be very much below board, and our co-founder was never able to meet Gerald Cotton. And that sort of started him coming to me to say, these people who are operating in this business at the time, some of the largest players, are completely illegitimate, it would seem. So there's a real opportunity in the market because those players only last for so long. They either blow themselves up or regulation comes in and shuts them down. So our whole business plan was predicated on us being able to withstand the other players who were going to blow themselves up or get shut down by regulation when the regulators eventually got around to coming into the market and taking a look at it. So when you say, what's your role? We really kind of started as a company that saw the opportunity of being one of the earliest legitimate players in this space at the time. And within a year of us founding the business, Quadriga did in fact blow themselves up very sadly. And then our role continued in sort of that capacity as one of the earlier platforms with a background in traditional markets, so we could speak to the regulators in a way that they understood. So we had, but long before, years before the Securities Commissions in Canada ever regulated the space, Bitvo would, I would sit down with the Securities Commissions and I'd educate them on how this space worked so that they could think about how they might form regulation in the space. Those conversations went on 3 years before the regulators ever posted their first guidance publicly on how things might work in Canada.
Talk about being ahead of the curve.
Yeah. It was great that they were interested in having that dialogue. Do they take all of our suggestions? Are there things that we would change? Absolutely. But I think that they're at least open to it, which is nice.
And I have to admit that I've gotten the same sense, having conversations with Canadian regulators more or less around the same time. I've gotten the same sense, a lot of openness. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it's also, we need to remember that just like a lot of people who join crypto or have to learn it a little bit before they can become effective, like that, there's a process within regulatory agencies as well. It's harder to ask the right question. It's harder to understand if something makes sense before you kind of develop your own expertise. And regulators are also humans. I think people sometimes forget that are kind of, you know, trying to do good and protect other humans' funds, but it just takes time sometimes. But it starts, I feel like the most important thing, that regardless of anything else, is this openness for dialogue. And then when the right people with the, you know, institutional background come in to mm-hmm. have these conversations like you, I have no doubt that you guys played a very important role in driving the thinking about regulation in Canada and globally. Let me ask you a little bit about, so you know, oftentimes, you know, DACOM, a lot of DACOM guests are risk, compliance, legal professionals. But we do, of course, speak with a lot of executives. And I'd like to ask you a little bit about the role of compliance, you know, and how, and you know, as a kind of core to the strategy, because that's in a lot of ways what you're describing. Basically, mm-hmm. it was clear that there weren't, I don't know if the right, you know, that there weren't enough platforms that were credible, compliance focused, etc. But it's also hard to build a compliance, you know, we know that very well from our work with our clients, it can be very difficult to build a compliance program where the requirements are not clear. So I'm curious if, like, what is your experience specifically on, you know, kind of driving, you know, from your role as a CEO and president and founder, driving the organization's strategy and trying to understand what's the right way to build within that a compliance strategy, how to hire the right people, how early. I think those are things that are very relevant to a lot of folks who are thinking about, you know, either a career in crypto compliance or building their own, you know, exciting projects.
Yeah, for us, I mean, and with any startup, your team is very small at the beginning. So my role in developing and designing the compliance program was really active and even managing the compliance program. I was actually the camlo for the first number of years of the business's life, just because you are a small startup and it's hard to understand the complexities. So I really wasn't comfortable without anyone else having that role for a long period of time. Yeah. But from our perspective, we designed it just by looking at what existed. So a lot of the early compliance regime was built around FinTrack and what those reporting and monitoring obligations would look like. That was a very well-defined regime. It didn't necessarily apply to us at the time, but we knew it was coming. So we built it to comply that so that when it was applicable, we really just flicked the switch and we were ready to go. The Securities Commission took a little bit more work because as we know, and a lot of us debate, these aren't securities. Bitcoin and Ether have been called by regulators as not securities. So a lot of the securities regulation might not have been necessary, but some of it is. And you can take parts of that and apply it certainly to trading practices and trading monitoring, things like wash trading and looking for manipulative trading trends. And again, that's not new regulation. That's really pieces of existing regulation that you can take and apply to your business. There's good guidance there. So it's not like maybe like a pharma industry where you'd be in completely uncharted waters.
Right. I think that's a lot of the challenge, right? It's moving away from this, you know, there's no regulation because there is regulation, even if it's not exactly specific for crypto. And yes. Understanding that regulation one way or another, you know, at the end of the day, a crypto platform is a financial business. So at the very least, you should do your best to fit in. And I also really appreciate one point I want to highlight is the ownership that you're describing. Mm-hmm. I think, by the way, feel free to disagree with me, but in my experience, oftentimes that's something regulators are really looking for. Executive ownership of the risk and compliance function versus like a feeling, you know, that it's slightly outsourced and kind of, you know, patchworked, right? That's something that we always try to advise, like, you know, it's really important to really own your compliance program and not just see it as a bunch of checkboxes. Mm-hmm. And anyway, and it really stems out of your experience. So it was interesting to hear. We touched, obviously, you actually gave an amazing brief on kind of like the state of Canadian regulation. But I want to do a bit of a deeper dive. I think we work with a lot of Canadian folks, but I think that for people who are not necessarily in Canada, it could be a bit confusing. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, you know, you see a good degree of clarity, a good degree of engagement from regulators, you know, and you're seeing licensing registration regimes that you were able to take advantage of. And you're seeing, you know, firms like, you know, Coinbase and Gemini becoming frustrated with the lack of clarity in the US, talking about Canada as one place that they're looking at to focus. At the same time, you're also seeing a bit of an exodus with some big names, like specifically recently Binance Canada announced that they're going to shut down in Canada because where regulation was going. And I think the same happened with Bybit. So what do you make of all of this?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're in it every day, it makes a lot of sense. So Canada, as you said, does have a very well-defined regulatory regime, and it was very well telegraphed. So they said, here is what we're going to do, and you have certain dates by which you need to do it if you want to operate in this industry. BitVo went forth and became one of the first to comply. But others just sort of sat back and didn't really do anything. And that was really frustrating for regulated platforms like BitVo, because we were actually losing business. And in one way, you think it's a competitive advantage that, you know, you're out there and you get regulated and you're showing that you're doing the right thing and you're showing you're legitimate. But there's a whole swath of the population that doesn't really care how safe you are. They assume you're safe without being regulated. And what they really do care about is that they don't have to provide certain information about themselves. Like, for example, as a regulated platform, we're required to collect what's called suitability information, which is information about your assets and your income. You could see how a lot of the traditional, more crypto purists don't want to provide any information about their assets and their income. They're barely used to providing information about their identity. Similarly, there's imposed trading limits on altcoins in certain provinces in Canada, where you can't trade more than $30,000 of altcoins. And altcoins is defined as anything except for Bitcoin, Ether, Bitcoin Cash, and Litecoin. Why they chose those four, nobody really knows. But people don't necessarily want to adhere to those regulations. The platforms need to, but the people don't. So what they do is they vote with their feet, and they choose an unregulated platform where they don't have to provide information about their assets and their income, and they don't have to provide information, or they don't have to adhere to certain trading limits that they don't want to adhere to. So while BitVo was one of the first, we felt like we were getting punished because we were seeing attrition from our platform going to these unregulated platforms, and it took our regulators a really long time to actually crack down on the unregulated platforms. They just started doing that in early 2023, and they put out a notice saying everyone needs to sign what's called a pre-registration undertaking that basically levels the playing field for unregulated and regulated platforms. And if you're not going to do that, then you need to get out of the market. So what Coinbase and Gemini are awarding or are saying, you know, this is the right thing to do, is there is a regulatory regime that you can follow and know that you're doing the right thing, versus what Coinbase faced in the US, where they thought they were doing the right thing, but the SEC is saying that they weren't. So they're saying, you know, this Canada's great. And then there's other platforms, to your point, like Binance, that eventually couldn't or wouldn't comply with the regime that was put in place and said, you know, we're leaving the market.
Well, again, I think you really clarified it. And you know, the past month and a half or so, and I apologize, by the way, if you and the listeners are hearing sirens, I am in Brooklyn after all, so please forgive me. After, you know, the past month and some of the enforcement actions here, and you know what, I'm going to avoid saying specific names because I don't want to be speaking on behalf of anyone else or purporting to, but one of the things I told to any regulator I spoke with in the past few weeks is that there's a real concern that this regulation by enforcement is going to discourage compliance. Because you have firms, and again, I'm not referring to anyone specifically, but I think you described your story and it kind of aligns with that quite well. You have firms that invested tens of millions, and maybe not less importantly, if you look at the opportunity cost, gave up billions potentially in order to not serve clients they're not supposed to serve in ways that they're not supposed to serve them. And then they're, you know, like at least here in the US, I mean, they're some of the first ones to get enforced against. I still have no doubt that it's a huge competitive advantage to get it out of the way now and be known as, you know, you kind of really went through everything. But that, all of that being said, I really feel your frustration. You know, I really feel the frustration. I don't want to, not putting frustration in your, you know, in your mouth, but like, I can see why it would be very frustrating.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, I'm glad that they're enforcing upon it now, and we're seeing some of these players leave, and we're obviously doing a big push in terms of marketing, et cetera, to say, you know what, we're committed to the Canadian market. We've already made that commitment. We're here to stay. We're fully regulated. Come join us.
Right. So, you know, I think, well, not that we have a time limit, but we try to stay around 30 minutes, which means that we're getting towards the end of our time. But I do want to touch a few, I had kind of three speedish round questions. And then I have another question that's not exactly related that I wanted to ask in the beginning and I forgot, but it's really interesting to me. But first, a little bit about what's next for the industry and Bitvo and what you think executives, or at least what you will be focusing on. Mm-hmm. First of all, your outlook for the industry. You know, we're, you know, already 6 months into the year after 2022, which many people called crypto's annus horribilis. Same things are moving very, very fast on the regulatory front in certain places. In other places, they seem to be moving forward. But I guess from your vantage point, Canada, Bitvo, or beyond, like, what's your outlook? Are we stepping out of a bear market or not? Are we, you know, are we going to see more adoption, less adoption? Anything on your mind? I'm curious.
Well, a couple competing views. So, I mean, I wish I had that crystal ball. I heard someone the other day say my crystal ball is pretty cloudy. And I would say that too. But some of the themes I see, so I think there's still a lot of building going on in this bear market in terms of what I see in terms of Web3, as well as some of the decentralized finance applications that are taking place. So I'm really excited about that. When we exit the bear market, I'm not sure. But when we do, I think that there's a lot that has been continued to be built during this bear market. I mean, look at the changes that have gone on with Ethereum. They completed their move to proof of stake, and they're moving forward on that basis. So I think there's a lot to be excited about when the excitement returns. But I do think that in the relative near term, it's still going to be challenging markets because there's a lot that's not related to crypto that will potentially impact it. For example, the US, they've raised their debt ceiling for now, but there's still potential recession talks. There's still interest rate hikes going on, not only in the US, but globally that could affect markets and the risk trade in general. So I think we got to get through a lot of that noise before we can really see what happens in markets broadly, let alone crypto specifically. But I think it's solidified its place in the financial ecosystem throughout this bear market. It hasn't gone away, as people keep predicting that it will. So I think that a lot of the building that has gone on while we've gone through this will come to fruition when the market does recover at some point, which it always does. It's up and down, right?
Yeah. I mean, your clouded crystal ball is very coherent to me, but taking it all with a grain of salt, I when people ask me for prediction, I always joke that the Jewish Talmud says that prophecy has been given to the full. So that's how I usually preface myself when I'm making outlook statements. So the second question, you know, what can we expect from Bitvo? Any exciting news or thing you want to tell us about?
Yeah, so for us, and we hadn't really touched on this, but we had agreed to sell ourselves to FTX last year, and obviously that fell apart. So in the wake of that, just really refocusing on the business, thinking about new products to add, such as a staking product, thinking about new coins to add. We currently offer 10, but really working within our regulatory regime to think about other products and services we can add to the platform and improve the tech. As I mentioned, we're going for our full IROC or CIRO license, which is a fairly heavy lift on the regulatory side, also very exciting. That will be between now and April of next year. So those are really our two main focuses, is continuing that regulatory push while adding more exciting products and services on the tech side.
Yeah. Well, thank you for, you know, being so open and transparent, and lots of really exciting things to look forward to. And you know what? And I think that you talked a little bit about the bear market earlier. I think that this is the time. Obviously, bear markets is when commitment and your real kind of faith in what you're doing is tested. And I think that specifically now, because of the regulatory challenges, you know, it's testing the commitment to compliance and regulation. But it also feels to me like we're about to get through the hurdle and, you know, kind of get past that hurdle if we keep at it. And, you know, you guys are obviously doing a lot keeping at it. So very exciting. And I guess I actually think you shared, you already kind of, you know, spruced up the conversation, intentionally or not, with a lot of really interesting best practices for anyone listening. But if I ask you directly, you know, what are you, you know, what are you personally going to be most, well, you already said what you're going to be most focused on, but like important best practices in your five and a bit years in this industry, you know, building a, you know, a fully regulated business?
Yeah, in terms of best practices, I'd say first and foremost is hire the best people and make sure you're appropriately staffed. I know that makes my job a lot easier when I have really dedicated people who are working alongside me to ensure that we're doing our best to comply with the regulations as they come at us, and trying to continue to be proactive in terms of not catching up. When you're catching up, you're always sort of one leg behind, and it's that much more stressful, or the process seems that much more arduous if you're catching up. So as it, to the extent I find, if you stay ahead of it, it makes it more manageable.
Right. And you know what, I will just bring back some, you know, a couple of other points that at least to me came out of your points. First of all, this point about really owning the compliance function, not thinking about it, just checking a box, but especially because, you know, it is a different asset class, and there, you know, you really need to think through things in order to be able to justify them. And I think you really exemplified that in your story. And also just kind of understanding that, you know, real vision and really changing the world, which is what crypto is trying to do, takes time and commitment. If you're only here to make a quick buck during a, you know, you like, you know, those people don't stay during bear markets. And the same is true for compliance. You know, like the bear markets are oftentimes the best time to think how, you know, if you don't mind me borrowing from Brian Armstrong, build back better, and kind of, you know, think about what you need to have in place. So when, it, you know, when things pick up and the stress is there on the system, everything's ready. Well, I'm just repeating your point. So I'm glad I repeated them correctly. But last question, you know what, I feel like sometimes we forget that there's things in the world that are not crypto. You know, in this industry, we're really deep in this. But one thing that I kind of spotted on your LinkedIn that I never really realized, even though I almost feel like I know you because of the firms I've been working for a long time, is your work with the Calgary Public Libraries, which you've been doing quite a while. And something about, you know, this, at the end of the day, a library is, you know, is you know, the pursuit of knowledge and the availability of knowledge. I don't know, something with it really connected to crypto, but I might be being overly creative with my, you know, making these connections. So I'm just curious to hear a little bit about what have you been doing with the Calgary Public Libraries?
Yeah, no, I think that's bang on, the connectivity to crypto. And I'd actually never really thought about that, but knowledge is the great equalizer. And that is really kind of the goal of what crypto started out as well. I got involved, I was actually at a gala party, and I went on a tour of the new Central Library here in Calgary. And I had always thought of a library as a place where you just go to rent books. And that never really interested me, not books, but necessarily renting them for free. And I realized what they did for the community. They did like so little of what they did was the renting of books. And so much of it was core fundamental support for the community in terms of helping homelessness, helping people get jobs, giving them access to laptops and job databases and interview training and an area for teens to go after school because they don't otherwise have a safe place. Wow. And oh, they'll give them a snack there, which might actually be sadly the only healthy meal they get all day, to early learning centers for mothers with their new babies, particularly new immigrants coming to the country and integrating them into society. And they do a great program called My First Bookshelf, where for underprivileged children, they mail them a physical book every month for until the child's the age of five to help build that home library. And I was just blown away by the support that they provided to the community. So I decided to join the board of the Library Foundation, which is a foundation that raises money for the libraries. I didn't actually know this until I moved here, but Calgary actually has one of the preeminent library systems in the world. And it's a system that other areas model their program after.
Canada is where it's at. whatever people tell you, it's just really such an amazing place. And I really miss it. And I've never been to Calgary, so I hope to visit you. But thank you for sharing that. And you know, like, it's so important to, you know, to find ways to contribute, you know, beyond, as much as we believe, and I really do believe that we're making the world better just by pushing forward safe and regulated crypto. There's so much more that can be done. So really exciting to hear about that. Mm-hmm. And there's something, I completely get it. Like I have a friend, my co-founder's wife, actually, Praveen, mm-hmm. if you've ever met him, she's a librarian. And I'm always astonished when I speak to her about what the New York Public Library does.
Right.
It's like we kind of forget that, yes, everything is digital today. It's easy to get, but the community element of
yes.
You know, is so powerful. And I think that in a lot of ways, that's a lot of what DeFi does, like, you know, potentially adding a community element, mm-hmm. you know, to things where, you know, not that I'm not, you know, banks are also communities, but like, it's a bit of a different story. So anyway, mm-hmm. I'm rambling, but really, really interesting to hear.
Yeah.
I think on that very, very inspirational note, we reached the end of our conversation. So Pam, thank you so much for taking the time. And
yeah, thank you.
For your commitment to safe and regulated crypto, for crypto market integrity, and for everything that, you know, Bitvo is doing to advance that vision. And I look forward to hopefully meeting in person and when mm-hmm. I visit Calgary.
Yeah, no, all the same back to Solidus as well. And thank you for having me on today.
My pleasure. Thank you.